Good morning. Our next case on the calendar and our last case for oral arguments this morning is 824-1554 in the matter of the welfare of the children of LMG, IEF, JP, senior parents. Council, I understand that we have a split in time for respondents, we will have counsel for the county will argue for 10 minutes. Is that correct?
That's my understanding as well.
Okay, and the cross-appellant respondents will argue for 5 minutes?
Yes.
Thank you. So we will arrange the clock accordingly. We'll do 10 and 5 so that you can see what you have left. Counsel, this case is being live streamed, and one of our members, as you can see, is not present in the courtroom. Judge Bratfold is attending remotely, so she can see and hear the proceedings on Zoom, but Judge Bratfold will ask questions, and we'll hear her asking questions, and she's hearing all of this as well. As I mentioned, this is being live streamed, this argument, but we keep just an audio recording for our public website later. Council, each of you has, as a whole, 15 minutes for principal arguments. I'll be split by you, respondents, and then counsel for appellant, 5 minutes for rebuttal, if you choose to use it. The podium, which is set kind of high right now, does go down and up, and there's a toggle switch sort of, you know, at waist level, if you would like to do that. So counsel for appellant, if you want to set yourself up, we'll be ready for you when you're ready. And each of you will all state your name and the county or party you represent when you begin your respective arguments, please. Go ahead.
May it please the court, counsel. Attorney Carrie Doom appearing this morning on behalf of the appellant, LMG, the mother in this matter. The issue raised by appellant that is before this court today is whether the district court abused its discretion in transferring permanent legal and physical custody of mother's three minor children pursuant to Minnesota Statute 260C.515, Subdivision 4. Under this statute, the district court, in transferring custody or entering an order transferring custody, must make detailed findings on four statutory factors. The first is how the children's best interest is served by the order, the nature and extent of the responsible social services agency's reasonable efforts to reunify the children with the parent, the parent's efforts and ability to use services to correct the conditions which led to out-of-home placement, and lastly, the conditions which led to the out-of-home placement have not been corrected so that the children can safely return home.
Counsel, the district court earlier entertained a petition and denied it in February of 2023, as I understand it, on the belief that services could possibly correct conditions. Is that correct?
That is correct. The matter first became before the district court trial, and it denied the petition at that time. Correct. And then a new petition was filed, yes.
And by the time this case came to a head in 2024, the court concluded that the conditions were not going to correct.
That is ultimately what the court concluded. However, as kind of pointed out throughout our brief and in our argument here today, it is our position that the agency failed to engage in reasonable efforts to assist mom in correcting the conditions that led to out-of-home placement. In this case, the kids were initially removed from mom's care for chemical use and exposure to domestic violence in the home. It is undisputed in the record that those issues were corrected. Where this case really came to a head is that in May of 2023, again, this would have been after the court initially denied the termination of parental rights, there was an incident that occurred in which it was alleged that mom had engaged in some physical discipline with the children. And what happened after May of 2023 really points to our argument that the agency failed to engage in those reasonable efforts to assist mom in correcting the conditions that led to out-of-home placement. At the time of the May 9th, 2023 incident, the main concern really kind of focused around parenting skills for mom. Was mom able to parent the children in a safe and appropriate way? To assist mom in that, the agency had started to provide two critical pieces of services: parenting education through ECFE and parenting skills work through TSA. In May of 2023, when this alleged incident occurred, those services stopped. The services that were critical to providing mom with that parenting education ceased completely. There were no further efforts by Isani County Health and Human Services to facilitate any type of comparable services to provide those services to mom or to otherwise give mom an opportunity to engage in services that the agency felt was critical for that reunification piece.
And during that time period, well, the two services you're referring to, was either of them delivered, needing to be delivered with the children present as well?
Yes. So the way that those services had been set up were services that were being provided in the home with mothers, with the children and mother present.
For both those services?
For both of those services. However, when contact with the children stopped, and again, that was also a decision that was at the discretion of Isani County Health and Human Services. They're the ones who discontinued that visitation and then said, well, visitation isn't happening, so now we can't do these services. But they didn't take another step then and identify what parenting skills could be offered to mom that didn't involve the children being present, what parenting resources could supplement that, nor did they provide the opportunity for visits to resume to allow those services to occur.
I want to understand, you know, the deficiencies that you're identifying. So in May of 23, when that incident, you know, happened, is your argument that visits should have continued during that time, or more so that they should have been resumed at some time and there should have been some substitute services during that time?
Exactly, Your Honor. So there were no visits whatsoever between May of 2023 and then I believe in August of 2023, visits resumed, but only resumed with the youngest child. Between May and August, there should have been visits. There was no, even if they were therapeutic visits or visits strictly for providing services, that didn't happen.
Visits with the children?
With the children.
So your argument is that there should have continued to be visits even after the incident, that should not have been interrupted at all.
Correct. It should not have been interrupted. And then a further concern is that when visits did resume with the youngest child in August of 2023, the agency at that point didn't bring back in parenting skills work, right? If the deficiency or the inability to provide that service was because contact wasn't happening with the children, contact had started again, at least with the youngest child in August of 2023, and yet no services were again provided. And so,
well, family therapy began in January 24 then, right?
Family therapy began in January of 2024. That is correct. But again, not to the point where because of the delays in getting that started, and I do note that there was once a family therapist was even provided, there was a two-month delay by Isani County Health and Human Services at a critical stage in this case to do their end to get the necessary paperwork done for that family therapy to start. So even though family therapy started, that was really at the midst of when trial was already beginning in this matter, and it was at a point where mom and the children weren't even in that family therapy context yet together in that situation. And so when we look at this after May of 2023, right, and at a point in time when Isani County Health and Human Services had not been asked to be relieved of any reasonable efforts, their efforts just stopped. They discontinued the parenting education. They discontinued the parenting skills. They provided, they had very minimal, there was a made August is what, approximately a three-month gap in any visitation. Once visitation resumed, again, it only resumed with one child and for a minimal amount of time. And what was concerning about that is it hardly expanded at all between August and January when visitation was occurring. And the visits were going well. The youngest child was doing well in those visits. She was enjoying it. She was asking for more, and it didn't happen. And then of particular concern, because this during kind of the midst of this trial, there was a pause. And in April of 2024, the court made clear to Isani County Health and Human Services that they needed to engage in some really heavy efforts to get visitation going for these children. And that the kids didn't get to decide. That was a critical piece, that the kids didn't get to decide whether or not those visits were happening. As is set forth in the record, Mom provided all sorts of ideas and opportunities to try and make visits successful, ideas of where the kids could go that would be fun, different things. And Isani County didn't follow through with anything. There was no follow-up on any of it. And again, no visitations occurred, even after the court directed them to get those visits going, to make them happen. They didn't.
And so when you say, I just want to make sure I understand. So after August, visitations only with youngest?
Yes.
And then, okay, throughout the remainder of the case?
No. So okay. What happened is in August, so visitation with the youngest resumed in August of 2023. That continued with the youngest until January of 2024. Then the decision was made to pause visits in January of 2024 in anticipation of Mom's criminal trial on the underlying charge from May 9th of 2023. Mom was ultimately acquitted of that matter. And then, but in January of 2024, following that, so they paused the visits and then they never resumed again.
For anyone?
For anyone.
For any child, rather.
For any child. Even after the court specifically directed in April of 2024 that visits need to be happening and the children don't get to choose. It was abundantly clear. And yet it didn't happen. And so when we get to this critical question about saying, you know, Mom can't safely parent, right, the court's ultimate kind of overarching conclusion in granting the transfer of custody was that Mom hasn't been able to demonstrate that she can safely parent the children altogether and safely parent the children following this incident of May 9th. But there was practically a year goes by where she was provided no opportunity to do so. And so we can't say, well, Mom, you can't demonstrate that you can safely, that we're going to transfer custody and find that you're not able to parent your children, when in the year leading up to that decision, she wasn't provided the opportunity to do so, and she wasn't provided any reasonable efforts to address those situations. If Isani County believed, which it did, that something had happened during that May 9th visit, that's a time when you ramp up services. You identify and say, okay, we had this alleged incident happen. We need to figure out what other services can we provide to Mom towards reunification. It didn't happen. There were no services that were provided other than eventually family therapy got started. But again, that was following a two-month delay by Isani County Health and Human Services. And so to say that Mom can't do this and Mom hasn't been able to demonstrate that she can do this, she wasn't afforded the opportunity to do so. And reasonable efforts require the agency to provide those services and those opportunities. And it just didn't happen here. And I understand that there's this idea that, well, the children were struggling emotionally and, you know, they weren't wanting to come to visits and they were being asked to come to visits. But again, there was nothing being done to further address that. There was no, like, maybe we need to look at different therapeutic work for the children if we're not making progress in this regard. Maybe we need to just try bringing Mom into the therapy sessions with the child and see what kind of improvement can happen. We just kept kind of spinning the wheels and doing the same thing with no change. There was just no progress being made. And Mom yet continued to do everything that she could possibly do, the things that were within Mom's control to do, and coming up with even ideas to expand visits. Mom was doing those parts, but there was no meeting with her. There was no two-way street happening in that regard. And at the end of the day, Mom's the one who ends up losing her fundamental right to parent the children.
Counsel, as long as you're on that topic, do you want to address the related appeal that's going on too?
Your Honors, I will. Just again, the court in its order recognized and that contact in the relationship between mom and the children is an important one and one that everyone felt should be preserved. And so ordered that there be some form of contact or ongoing contact between the children and mom. And then now we've got this appeal saying that an order regarding ongoing contact with the mom and children is not in their best interest. And that just, from my perspective, flies squarely in the face of all of the testimony that was at trial. The testimony at trial from the social worker, from the guardian ad litem, from the custodians themselves was that ongoing contact was something that was important and needed to continue and needed to be maintained and was in the children's best interest. In part, the court granted the transfer of custody based on the fact that it believed that those things were going to be adhered to. And I think the court's orders or the testimony or the transcripts from those hearings that occurred after that transfer of custody were really telling about how important those representations were about ongoing contact were to the court in making its decision. It was in one of the kind of one of the last post-permanency hearings following the transfer of custody, and when one of these issue and these ongoing issues of contact were continuing to surface. And, you know, in the transcript, the court says, and I think this is compelling, and I really think it speaks even to the underlying transfer of custody. She says, it did not have to end this way. Collectively, we all bear responsibility for a significant review of step-by-step what happened in this case at every juncture. All of us. It didn't have to end this way for these children. I am firmly convinced errors were made all around, and we must do some collective history researching, everybody, and soul searching about what went awry. This is the judge who issued this decision. Mistakes were made. Mistakes occurred. And mother is the only one who lost the opportunity to engage in her fundamental right to parent her children because of those errors and failures. It's for those reasons that we respectfully request that the court reverse the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the county.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel, I'm Tim Nelson from the Isani County Attorney's Office here today on behalf of Isani County Health and Human Services. We're specifically respondent as to the question of whether the district court's order ultimately permanently transferring physical and legal custody constituted an abuse of discretion. The agency from the beginning of this case was dedicated to trying to exhaust every opportunity to reunify this family. The case didn't begin in May of 2023 when the incident occurred. The removal happened in September of 2021. And as the briefing and the record reflects, there were dire circumstances at that point. There were significant issues related to chemical health in the home, related to domestic violence within the home, housing, transportation were significant questions. And even 5 months into the case, there weren't a lot of signs of progress, or really great signs for hope at that point. The agency hung in, worked diligently with LMG in addressing those core issues, and together they pushed the rock up the hill here to the point where this was on the precipice of reunification, really, in early of 2023. Visitation to that point had advanced to including unsupervised visitation, multiple hours, four times a week of visitation, and really through the efforts of LMG, with the assistance of the agency that had gotten the case there to where reunification was really within reach. What happened on May 9th changed the trajectory of this case in ways that, you know, created headwinds that the agency ultimately wasn't able to overcome. The agency did not quit on the case at that point. The agency didn't turn around and file a termination of parental rights petition. It didn't refile a permanency petition. It didn't ask to be relieved of efforts. It didn't ask to be permanently relieved of having visitation. They had a pause of visitation that happened in light of what occurred on May 9th, but the agency wanted to stay with it, and they did. The work that the agency did after that included the worker getting to work, talking with the kids, trying to understand their feelings, trying to understand what might be a path back toward more contact between the children and their mother. The agency worked with the children's therapist to ensure that the therapy was focused on the reservations that the kids had related to related to contact, so that that might be overcome. So there might be progress on that front. The agency collaborated with the guardian ad litem to engage with the children to see what might help us get us back toward more meaningful contact between LMG and the children.
Counsel, acknowledge in the findings that the court found that, quote, more could have and should have been done.
I think as a general, certainly it's in the order, yeah. And I think there's always a chance in these cases to look backward, knowing what worked and what didn't work. But I think what happened during that stretch of the case is that there was a decision that had to be made about how hard to push these children back into visitation. This isn't a case where the children were fully opposed to visitation from the get-go. We'd advanced to where there was four times a week visitation for multiple hours. The same children who were going to that visitation were the children that had that resistance later. We got to this point where the children exhibited this resistance throughout, and it wasn't just a matter of the children just saying they didn't want to go. In other words, the testimony of the children's therapist, of the social worker, attest to serious concerns. Self-harm comes up in those conversations. And one thing in particular that jumped out at me in reviewing before argument is ISMF, the youngest child. She keeps hearing from the worker who keeps coming back to her, talking about visitation, wanting to engage about visitation, what'll help us get to visitation. And they got to a point where ISMF would cover her head with a blanket, would hide, would try to avoid those conversations, and at some point refused to continue to meet with the worker, which is really the only lifeline the agency has at that point to continue to try to work.
Counsel, I understand, and the record is replete with what you're telling us here today. I'm getting more towards, for instance, restarting the parenting skills courses.
Sure.
Yeah,
certainly. So the testimony of the worker was that was not just a unilateral decision by the agency, but that there was discussions with the provider, and that the service was just one that was premised on there being work with the family together, with LMG and the kids together, and that once contact wasn't happening, that it just wasn't a viable thing to use. And so that's where the agency's energy shifted almost entirely to how do we get contact back together. And one piece that they did, too, that I want to make sure I touch on is that there was discussion about them talking with LMG about what her ideas might be for visitation. And I think the brief sort of characterized that as, well, they didn't follow up on that. The testimony at trial from the worker was that she was doing that to try to talk with LMG about, well, what might be things you might imagine for visitation, so she could then take that conversation or the substance of it back to the children and talk with them about what might work or what visitation might look like as a way to try to prod things along. The worker testified she did that. It just didn't create a breakthrough. But that was an effort to try to, find a way to break through with visitation. With family therapy, the testimony was that they essentially looked for appropriate family therapists throughout the case, that it's a limited resource, but they continue trying to find one. They identified one in November of 2023. The testimony on the delay was that the worker didn't believe it was a paperwork delay between November and when that service started in January, but that there were conversations that needed to happen at that point involving the children's therapist, involving the guardian ad litem, involving the agency and the children about whether virtual therapy was a plausible thing to do or how the therapy would look. And there's also just a natural delay there in terms of making an appointment. Typically, you're not making it and then going in the next day. That was another diligent effort by the agency showing that it was committed here to trying to get to reunification. And also, family therapy had been made available to the family in September of 2022. I think the briefing covers that That was at a critical point in the case. I think it looks even more critical as we look back now, because that was at a point where a lot of these core issues had been stabilized, related to chemical health, mental health, housing, and transportation. And so repairing the fracturing or these relationships was really in focus. The service was undisputedly made available in September of 2022. LMG didn't take advantage of the service when it was made available, and so that opportunity was lost. I think everybody who all collectively wanted to see reunification here wishes they knew what would have happened if some of that work could have happened at that critical stage before the visits that were problematic in early 2023. And similarly with the parenting skills and parenting education was made available in September of 2022 as well. The record reflects LMG attending one session and then falling off with that service and not returning to it until January of 2023, which again, in the agency's view, reflects an overall arc here of diligent efforts, committed efforts to try to see reunification happen in this case. I think with respect to the pausing of visitation, I think that was something that the testimony reflects was not just done by the agency without rich consideration. There was consultation with the children's therapist and the other professionals that were involved in trying to be sensitive, to what might work well for these kids, what might be consistent with their well-being. And again, ultimately, at the end of the day, you had a district trial judge here that had this case for approximately 33 months from September of 2021 all the way through the end of this trial in 2024, more than 20 hearings where she's evaluating the segments of the case and assessing whether there were reasonable efforts made at each step of the way. She finds that there are reasonable efforts at every single one of those hearings, and also develops a deep familiarity with the people involved, the children, the participants, has two trials that involve multiple days of testimony where she's personally observing the witnesses, including personally observing LMG. And so this was a trial judge that was in a good position to assess what might work, what was advisable in terms of visitation, what risks she as the judge was willing to take in terms of how affirmatively to order certain things. She did order, as counsel pointed out, heavy efforts, every effort to try to get visitation happening. She did not reach a point where she said visitation will happen this day and the children will be taken there. She didn't do that.
Counsel, do you have a position on the related appeal?
The county did not register an objection when the court issued that order, and so I don't know that I'm positioned to weigh in. I can say that the agency, this is not a termination of parental rights. It's a transfer of physical and legal custody, and it reflects the agency's respect for the bond between the children and LMG and wanting to have an outcome that left room for there to be legal avenues for contact and a relationship beyond what would have been available if it was a TPR. I see I've reached the end of my time if there aren't further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And counsel for the respondents / cross appellants. It's an unfamiliar noise. But we're not quite sure what it is. So if it's okay, I'm sorry for the disruption, but if it's okay to continue, that would be great. Thank you.
Your Honor, may it please the court, Attorney Delmar Flynn on behalf of cross-appellant respondents SL and AS.
Good morning, Judge Smith, Judge Cleary, and Judge Bratfold, virtually, and counsel. This is a cross appeal of a contact order that doesn't make sense because it isn't supported by the facts. It doesn't provide sufficient notice to the parties, and it doesn't comport with the law. For those reasons, we are asking this court to affirm the transfer order but reverse the contact portion. Now, specifically, how is this contact clause not supported by the facts? Because of the extensive history of abuse supported by the historical and ongoing abuse during these pending proceedings. And these pending proceedings include a trial where 19 child protection investigation and reports are entered in as exhibits on the record. The history of abuse is also reviewed by the therapist's testimony. Therapists working with the children for over 2 years. Children, all three, diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. The therapist noted in her testimony that these children are still in the midst of this trauma. The therapist noted conversations with LMG regarding the child's needs, that basically they should not be touched when they're triggered. And what is triggered? Their PTSD. The therapist testified as to the adverse reactions the children had, the counsel's already touched on, to the mere discussion of visits. All three children have had those adverse reactions. IIF, rocking on the floor, disassociating, shutting down, self-harm. He's so disturbed, he'd rather hurt himself to distract himself from the stress of contact with LMG. And he's told the therapist, I didn't want to get hurt again, when he talks about visits. ISMF, the youngest, feels conflicted. She started visits. She's talked to the therapist about feeling pressure to go back to visits because she doesn't want to disappoint LMG. And yet she's drawn pictures in therapy regarding her fear of LMG. And the oldest, whose wishes should not be disregarded by the court, has talked about being stressed and overwhelmed at the discussion and idea of visits. Even sharing a simple letter from LMG triggered reactions from the children. The oldest rolled up in a rug. The middle child disassociated. Again, the youngest child refused to hear the letter after one paragraph.
Counsel, let me interrupt just for a minute. I think that all three of us are aware of the extensive record involving the children. But as Mr. Nelson just stated, it's not a termination case. Given that, and given the court's decision to have supervised visitation, not unsupervised, it would appear the court is unwilling to make that final step to where they eliminate complete contact, which would make it pretty close to a termination case. Your comment.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I would speak to the fact that the order is still vague and ambiguous as it's written. It speaks to supervision. It doesn't state who can supervise. And I would like to note for the court that in her testimony, LMG stated that in the February incident, which she reported and also had an investigation, February of 2023, her grandfather was present. And still, that incident occurred. So there's no clarity on to who would provide that visitation.
Well, it does say it has to be an agreed on third party or the foster parents.
Correct, Your Honor, but also I would argue that first of all, there's transfers for custody that occur all the time without visitation provisions. Mom still has the option to return to court to motion under 518 to return the children home. Second of all, I think that decision should remain with the custodians because they are the ones with the facts on the ground receiving these children, having to put them into the car to get them to visits. And the order just doesn't reflect all of this history of how distressing it is to get these children to visits. It needs to start with family therapy. That is a more appropriate order. And that's also found in the statute cited by the court when she was talking about extending jurisdiction for review about providing services to meet the conditions required by the court. That is more appropriate here. I don't think anyone's disagreeing that family therapy is necessary. It's just a prerequisite, and it's beyond required for these children to be able to do the repair. If they can't even discuss a letter, how are they supposed to see their mother in the same room? And this is a mother who the court has heard testimony just doesn't get the level of abuse, the effect of that abuse on these children, and what they need to get through that.
Counsel, I'm going to note that you've gone over time. If you want to just wrap up, that would be appreciated.
For those reasons, we request that the court affirm the transfer order and reverse the clause on contact. Thank you.
Thanks. And counsel for appellant.
Thank you. I want to begin by just touching back to the idea by Isani County Health and Human Services that merely talking to the children or consulting with the guardian ad litem was sufficient in terms of reasonable efforts to get visitation restarted. And when we're talking about reasonable efforts, it's been repeatedly said that we're talking about real, genuine assistance. And again, I want to keep going back to this April of 2024, when the court is saying you need to engage in getting heavy efforts towards visitation started. And I think the testimony that followed after that from the social worker was important. The social worker testified that mother had provided a number of ideas, people, and places to try and facilitate visitation. And what did the agency do in response to that? And this was exactly the testimony from the social worker. They were continuing to consult. They consulted with a therapist. They consulted with the guardian ad litem. But they never said, children, you're going to a visit. We're picking you up. We're going to go to a visit. This is happening. This is what we have to do. In the world of family law, we have kids who are resistant to visitation frequently. But they never even tried to make that visit happen. And even more concerning in that regard is there was finally a phone call that occurred with IEF. And in that phone call, following that, IEF wanted to go and have a visit. But the visit didn't happen. So we're putting all of this stock on the children, what the children want, even though the district court made it abundantly clear we're not doing what's based on what the children want. And then you have a child who wanted a visit, and it didn't happen. And again, and then following up on this contact piece, as we look at this again, everybody who testified at that trial testified that maintaining ongoing contact with these children was incredibly important. They all supported it. And now we're going to say that, oh, it was an abuse of the court's discretion to order visitation when every witness at trial testified that ongoing visitation was important. And in just wrapping up, I also think it's important to point out there's a lot of, you know, reference and reliance on the children's therapist and what the children's therapist was reporting, various things. And again, it was an issue in trial, and I think it's worth raising here again, too. And it candidly was a cause for concern with the district court in trial that the custodian, the foster dad, sat in on every single one of the children's visits with their therapist. And even more concerning from mother's perspective is that in kind of February, March, April of 2023, after the first petition was denied, it was determined that foster dad needed to take a step back out of therapy. And it was decided that, and he was told, that he was no longer going to be able to sit in on the children's therapy sessions, that mom needed to be the one to be a part of those therapy sessions. That plan was made, and then this alleged incident in May of 2023 happened. That's a concern. And from that point on, the children say that they never wanted to go in. You know, they were having then all of these reactions in therapy when the foster parent was present, reactions that the foster parents were reporting and observing to the social worker. When the social worker would go and talk to the children about visits, it would occur in the home of the foster parents. those are concerns as well. And I think that's important as we look at this and then go back to what the court was saying at the very end, which I quoted previously, that mistakes were made. And those mistakes should not have resulted in mother losing her fundamental right to parent her children. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for your briefing, for your oral arguments this morning. The case is submitted, and we will have a decision out under the expedited time frame that applies to this case. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
All rise.